All right. Hey, blow it.
Whoa.
Are you recording?
I'm always recording. Everything right. I do.
Okay. Hey, blow it.
Oh, I thought we already started.
Hi. I always keep you on your toes. Welcome to the Down in Front podcast, last call edition. Thank you so much for hanging out. Thank you much for tuning in. On our last call segments, we try to give you each and every and all details. All spoilers going to be included. So tonight, we are going to be reviewing a special treat. This was actually requested, so I'm really excited by Dark Coast Worldwide. The name of the film is called Between the Darkness, so it was written and directed by Andres Rivera. There's also another title to the film called Come Said the Night. So I'm pretty pumped and pretty stoked about it, especially as we're moving towards fall. We're getting used and we're going to have a lot of these sort of horror films, and I'm always curious to see what's different about it. So before we get into that, I'm going to toss it over to this beautiful young gentleman and ask him, what you sipping on tonight?
Yeah, guys, what's going on? I am sipping on Mindset Project Mosaic IPA by, it's a Exhibit A Brewing Company. It's pretty solid. I actually like it. It's an IPA, just like nice. Every, you know, 30-year-old bearded individual is drinking right now.
I mean, IPAs is basically going to be the pumpkin spice lattes for guys who think they're cool. So I guess that's a thing.
That's true. It's absolutely true. We drink way too much of it, and honestly, should probably just drink a lager or water every once in a while.
I mean, it is coming up to my favorite time of the year, and shout out to Chris P., who's giving me an open invite on Twitter to drink some pumpkin beers with him and listen to some, I was going to say Rascal Flatts. No, not them. Fleetwood Mac. But I would say I do like Rascal Flatts. Please at me, bro. I'll put my Twitter on here.
Yeah, I'm gonna leave right now. You're this no more. This is not a dual review. It is a single person review. Bye.
Perfect. Well, Blue, it is always good to have you on. It's great to see your face.
Thank you.
I am currently sipping on a vitamin water kiwi strawberry, or called Focus. Just because I was not really up to drinking tonight. My stomach has been killing me all day, but definitely wanted to kind of get ready for a couple of reviews we're actually doing this week. So we're super pumped about that. But I definitely want to get into this movie. I want to get into this film. I think it kind of struck me and it's kind of, I really like sort of the overall sort of element of this film itself. So before we get into it, I do want to let everybody know that we will be spoiling the movie itself. If you haven't seen it, definitely go check it out. I believe it's going to be on digital and streaming right now. So you should be able to find it on DirecTV, Vudu, Fandango, Vimeo, Amazon, and iTunes. So I'll definitely make sure that we can post as many links as we can once we actually release this. So we're going to be talking about and actually really dissecting this Between the Actual Darkness. It's going to be starring Danielle Harris and Lou Temple. So as we usually kind of open up, we're going to talk about some general thoughts and feelings. And so let's give a bit of an overview. So Blewett, what's some general thoughts and some feelings that you had about Between the Darkness?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting movie. Let's put it that way. I think there's a clear separation between a feature length industry studio backed film that is scrutinized by writers, producers, directors, the studio heads, the studio underlings, you know, like all these people that are adding input, and then somewhat a smaller crowd. And I think this movie could have used a little bit more revision and refining. That being said, I did like the setting. It's a dynamic that we don't usually see. Like a lot of times these like quote unquote home invasion movies are someone outside of the house is trying to get in. Where in this case, we learn that, spoiler alert, the father is the one that is trying to get in. And I think it's a nice little twist on that genre. I think it was also kind of nice how they included a lot of like the mythology behind things, where they had a clear indication of a world that existed, right? A world built on Greek mythology rather than, you know, the current, let's just say the current standard of Judeo-Christian, you know, methodology. And I thought that was kind of cool how they took that. I think they could have gone a little harder into that extreme, but it was an interesting experience to live in.
Yeah, I mean, I can't agree with you more. I think I really enjoyed, I guess the biggest thing that was an overview, I enjoyed the simplicity of this actual film. I really like the fact that the film just starts. There's not a weird sort of ramp up. We're kind of automatically taken into this environment when they're kind of pulling up to this sort of ranch or this home. And kind of, they seem like they're sort of not quite like living off the land, but they don't have sort of internet. You know, they don't have a TV or telephone, right? And I think there was something really nice about just kind of being one with nature. And they had sort of a sense of sort of meditation, and they had their own way of life and how they were necessarily living. And so I think you just kind of introduce those characters kind of pretty quickly. I like the fact that they were, it felt like they were doubling down, but I would even challenge them to go like four, you know, do double down, like KFC double down, like four times as much of the Greek mythology. Like, we talked about the fact that the Hippocrates tattoo was on his actual arm, which I thought was pretty cool. And they had I don't call it like a duality sort of purpose, but Hippocrates was like the father of medicine, him being the father that was actually on his arm, but it's also, you know, had a little bit more of being like a charlatan. And we actually kind of see this a little bit later on in the film. So it looks, and he also kind of mentions the fact that there's a succubus, which, because of South Park, that line of a succubus is always, it's a goddamn succubus. It ruins me every time. So I think I like some of these elements it was being brought into the film. I was getting super creeped out about some of these elements it was bringing up, especially sort of sleep paralysis and the use of different colors, and how certain characters would kind of shed their articles of clothing and similarly wearing different type of clothing. But I do kind of agree with you. I wish that it was a little bit more sort of controlled. It felt like we had some characters kind of go in and out, and it really, really was kind of focused on one sort of main character, but which is kind of the father and the daughter named Sprout. But we actually didn't see, and we didn't hear too much of Percy or Perseus. And that was a bit of a bummer for me, because it felt like she was kind of, everything that she did was off screen. And I think it's kind of telling a little bit if they're really pulling from Greek mythology, right? There's some beginnings of theater. There's like, we talk about like Oedipus and Oedipus Rex and all that stuff. A lot of this action and a lot of the dialogue is happening literally off screen, right? We're basically only find out what happened from somebody talking about it. And it's kind of a bummer, because that's not how you really want to make a movie. And that's kind of what they did for this actual character. So I was kind of bummed. I kind of want to see things kind of more told, and if not in a linear fashion, a little bit more succinct going throughout, because it felt like we were kind of ramping up, and then it felt a little bit fragmented all the way up until the end. And so I'm kind of hoping that they kind of tie it in together.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Percy's character, so can we get around this big thing, the Hereditary comparison? I think Hereditary kind of knocked it out of the park, where they killed off their weird little kid midway through the movie. And it's so...
Spoiler alert for Hereditary.
Yeah, sorry. Well, it's 2 years. We already like talked about the follow-up, whatever. But like, it did feel like Percy was integral to the plot, and then Percy just kept on being there, when like it almost should have, they should have reversed it almost, right? And had, was it Magda, be the live child and have them be a little bit more closely related, you know, closer in age, you know, between Sprout and I think Magda was her name. Personally, I thought Percy was a he, but whatever. They felt like they weren't really a character. They were a plot device, but like the plot device kept on existing. So it was like, where is this going to go? I do say I love the ending with the half mask of dirt on Percy's face. Like, that was a cool wild child type look.
Yeah. I like that element too, and I like what they were trying to kind of go for, but I think you kind of mentioned it. I wanted a little bit more throughout, and it kind of seemed like they inserted those sorts of things. There were some really cool shots. I was even surprised by some of the shots that was even kind of made about the actual scenery as a whole. That was kind of great. And the weird quirkiness that, you know, the father Roy was doing of also playing golf in sweats. Kind of random.
That was cool. I like that. It was weird and unexpected and fit into the world.
And I like those things, and I really wanted to see them do that more and more. And so I was kind of bummed that they didn't really go further into that. But I did like what they were trying to do, especially when we get, you know, the two characters that come sort of, I'm not saying out of nowhere, but we get Max and Max's mother, whose name was
Ranger Rick.
No, it wasn't Ranger.
Yeah, it's Danielle Harris is the actress's name. I forget the character name.
Oh, right. Stella Woodhouse, right.
Yeah.
So when we get these two characters that are, you know, at one point it was just us with the family. It was just Roy. It was just, you know, we learned a little bit more about Magda a little bit, but Roy, Percy, and Sprout, it was really just those three. And then at some point we get these two characters that is like now affecting change in the entire world. And it's sort of filling and kind of moving things around. And that's when she started having visions and the sleep paralysis, which definitely strikes chords with me because I suffer from sleep paralysis. So anytime I see a movie from that, I'm like, I'm all for this. I am all about it because it's really nothing that they can figure out why people get sleep paralysis. So I like the fact that they kind of went to that one a little bit and she was kind of necessarily kind of seeing things. And then fast forward to the near the ending when Sprout finally goes and kind of stabs Roy, her father. And we can actually see that a bit of they think it was kind of the devil, but it really not. And so I was getting kind of confused near that part because I wasn't sure why the sleep paralysis was causing her to kind of have these visions at first, thinking that was being evil. But then that being or that Gorgon that she called it was actually something that was saving her from this evil man who actually has caused so many sins and literally killed people in front of her. And so that's the one thing I was getting kind of confused about was what's actually, you know, is it a question or is this a story about good and bad, or is this more so of they're just telling a story how they want to tell it, right? In a little different and kind of weird circumstance.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. So I actually kind of like the twist where the Gorgon ended up being the good person-ish in the end, where it was a facsimile of the sister. I agree that the central theme was kind of obscured, right? Like, they didn't really push something through to the end. And so it kind of made the payoff a little bit weaker, where, like, is this a cult movie? Is it a supernatural movie? Is it a, like, traditional horror movie? Is it a monster movie? Like, they didn't really push that through. I suffer from the opposite of sleep paralysis, where my body doesn't shut off when it should. So I keep on moving, even though my brain is like, let's go to bed. So I don't quite know the sleep paralysis world that you do, but I think they did it really nicely, and I think they could have played on that a lot more, where that separation of good and evil, right? That the Gorgon starts off as the scary monster that, you know, everyone's afraid of, and then kind of morphs midway through, rather surprisingly, into the sister. I think they could have played on that more, that they should have had more scenes at night when Sprout was asleep to try and, you know, pull that, like, oh, is this a monster or is this someone who is trying to help from the afterlife? That was kind of a big miss for me.
Yeah, I think you were spot on with the analysis component, because it definitely felt like they could have went one of these directions. I don't necessarily know if they need to have a monster movie, but they can tease a monster movie, but has something to do with this kind of supernatural, or have, you know, some sort of weird kind of drug induced thing. And I think it's kind of interesting as I was watching this at the same time as watching Monster Hunter, that there was kind of a Charles Manson sort of Mind Hunter, not Monster Hunter. if there was a, I was also playing that too. But there's kind of a Charles Manson moment in that particular kind of show that talks about cult followings and things like that. And I think it was, it definitely kind of hit home, because that's something real, right? That actually kind of happens. And especially, what do you think of how children are being grown up in this environment? And we see Percy is wearing these gloves, right? And I'm not sure if we ever kind of explained why she's wearing some oven mitts and why she's covering her hands. And so I'm like, there's things in this movie that I'd love to like flush out a little bit more. And we know, and even in the actual sort of description, it's kind of like a bit of a coming of age film, as Sprout is sprouting, right? She's actually kind of growing up and being a particular kind of woman. And although it's not really kind of explicitly stated from her, but at least from the her movements and the actual different attire that they put her in, she's actually kind of going and dancing, and it seems as though she's kind of opening up and kind of expressing or kind of showing a bit of feminine or sort of sexuality for her character. And so it seems as though that, did the father just not like the fact that his daughter was growing up? And that's why he killed his other daughter? I thought it was kind of strange by exactly what, and I think that was the one thing that I was really kind of asking myself. I'm like, so is he just going to kill all of his daughters when they're coming of age and they're kind of hitting puberty and they're having their periods and stuff like that? Or is he just upset for the fact that, or is this a story, right? And this is the other thing I was thinking, is this a story of a way overly protective, overbearing father that just has blown all of this shit out of his mind from some weird drug-induced thing, and he's made up all this huge and crazy myths from his wife dying? And is this something that he can tell himself and now convince his children about all these things if his wife dying, and he just wants to protect them in a shitty father way? These are some of the things I was just kind of curious about, kind of drawing those sort of conclusions.
I think you raise a good point that we never experienced the mother, right? I think the mother almost lays a groundwork on how he is as a human. And I almost wish that instead of the Magda, like, flash, I really hope I'm saying the right name. Otherwise I'm just going to, you know, type this in the post. All right, good. The Magda scenes, we saw the mother, because she really sets the precedent on how the father treats the kids, right? If she is a meek, unimposing, non-sexual, reserved human being, all of a sudden that makes him a monster in one way, right? Where he just wants to dominate the situation. He's a misogynist, like, very clearly. If she is a very sexual person who is full of life and vigor and very outgoing and such, you could see that her dying, he would take the opposite, where he is trying to protect his offspring from having the same path that leads to an early exit, you know, from the game of life. And so not knowing the mother really creates him as an undefined character. And so you don't get a ton of motivations. And honestly, the movie didn't help itself. At the end, they kind of talk about how they used to worship some gods, and then years later they started worshiping other gods. And that kind of muddies it. It's like, why? Why did you switch those gods? Was it a reaction to something that happened, or was it an affirmation of something that happened? You know, like, we don't really get that. And because we spent so much time with the father, like, this is another thing. I wish that we almost spent less time with the father, because we got to know his character too well, right? We got to know him a little bit on a personal level. And so when we saw him in the kid scenes, he wasn't a total enigma. And I think they could have, to really draw out the coming of age style, they could have really made him unknown, right? Like, you don't really know where your parents are coming from when you're that age, and you're trying to figure it out on your own. And so add the horror supernatural element, like, and you know, you get somewhat of an interesting, plot. But like, if he just came and go with his golf gloves, like, you could include that, but you don't show him playing golf. you're like, oh, who's this? What is he doing? Like, what is this? I think they could have really drawn out the case of the kids a little bit more and added a little bit of more allure to the film. Yeah, there was like simultaneously not enough backstory in the mother, but too much backstory in the father. It could have gone with, I guess, more and less.
Yeah, I agree. It's something that, because the father was on screen so much, it sort of hurt the reveal that he was a bad guy, because there was no other explanation. It got to the point where it was like, yeah, I know he was on screen the entire time, of course, that he's gonna be that bad person. But I think if it would have focused on the daughters, and there should have been like this, like a mystery, like you said, you said it best. If there's a mystery of like a monster mystery that we need to kind of be following this weird thing, and there's a couple different signs for this monster, and the father is like, what are you guys talking about? Y'all are silly, blah, blah, blah. And then we're sent with the reveal that, you know, her father's randomly having sex with the ranger outside, which I thought was a great scene. And then that's when it's kind of revealed in, at least from Sprout's eyes, that, oh, you know, he's not necessarily the Gorgon, right? But he is like that monster that they necessarily fight. And then there's a weird mix up between the Gorgon and this other monster that they actually need to vanquish. I thought it would have been a little bit more helpful just having him on a little bit less. But I appreciate it. Like, his character was a mix between Matthew McConaughey on Shrooms mixed with, who does he look like? He looks like somebody to me. I can't remember who he looks like to me. But I was like, man, this guy looks like super familiar. I've definitely seen him in other work, but I'm like, he looks like somebody mixed with Matthew McConaughey.
Definitely got Matthew McConaughey. I'm totally with you. It was like, what was that terrible movie? Not Serenity. Was it Serenity?
Okay, first of all, we may have to start banning talking about Serenity on the rest of our episodes, because we probably mentioned it.
No, that is a benchmark movie. What that was Matthew McConaughey. What was the other one the week before?
Keanu?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or was that Serenity?
No, that was Replicas.
Yeah. Replicas. And we did. Oh, that was such a bad stretch.
It was a bad month. First of all, it was January. So yes, it was a bad month.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think, didn't we do like something terrible the first week too?
We don't have to go by that.
Yeah, I think we pushed our review, our yearly review, and then we did Replicas, and then we did Serenity, and we're like, oh my god, what did we just do for a month?
I think at that time, I think I even said, oh, good thing we're going to do Hellboy. I hope that's good. One of the actual reviews, like, oh, this is terrible. So we'll wrap it up and kind of give you some lasting thoughts. So, Blewett, if you would recommend this particular movie.
Hang on. I got something more to this. So,
hit me.
Technical side. First off, I'll start with positive. Camera work, CGI for an indie film, very good. Awesome. Cool lighting, cool variants and angles on shots. Well done. Audio, oh boy. So there was very noticeably scenes where they punched in. And so I mean, like, there was a dialogue on the set. They had a word that came out wrong, but the actor's face was in the correct position so they could replace the dialogue, right? It's very easy to do. They did not keep the level the same. There was times when the character was talking and then their voice would jump up for about three sentences and then drop back down again. And it was, oh my god, it took me out of the film. The other thing is that they couldn't consistently mix. So there's a couple things, right? So there's dialogue, there's music, there is background, and then there's background ambience, and then action sounds. We refer to that more as something called Foley. And so in the Foley, there was like weird stuff where you could hear footsteps and brushes being brushed against people like way louder than they should have. Like, it was just, the audio was all over the place. Things were simultaneously like too loud, being undercut by other elements, and then other elements would shoot down, and like certain things would switch places, and it didn't seem like a cohesive effort to do that. Like, here's the thing. So I was thinking, this is a movie where they worship a god that values silence, right? And so it makes sense that you should have a very audio tight film, right? Like, you should pay a lot of attention to how that goes. And I think you can go either one of two ways, right? They made several instances of like, hey, you should spend an hour in penance in silence for our god, right? And so you could either decrease the background noise and have that really stand out, that they really have to be quiet, be in silence, meditation, because the god demands silence. Or you could flip it and raise the background noise as an act of rebellion against that. And so because everything was inconsistent, you never really got that. Like, you don't really know what silence truly meant to that character. It was a very easy metaphor to get, honestly, and I take massive points off for it, because they should have been paying attention to it. The other thing is, the music in it was generic indie horror film music. I recently watched a series for some short film that was like being composed, nothing too special. Score was cool. Score was passable, but it sounds exactly like what we got in this film. And to me, I don't know, like, it's, you could be more interesting, especially because there was a musical element to this. So very particularly, you got a very interesting rhythmic pattern, right? You had the triangle. So you had long, short, long, short, long, short, 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 short. And that's somewhat repeated throughout the entire film, that they play the triangle with ting, 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 ting. You know, that was all over the place. How did the score not reflect that? You could very clearly have orchestrated long short. So, in all honesty, one of the famous motives of all time is Beethoven. Da-da-da-da. Like, that appears, that's one of the most famous classical pieces of ever. If you go and listen to that score, though, that motive is absolutely everywhere. Three shorts and a long. And it's not just the simple that like we're all used to hearing, but it is the texture in the background. It's other melodies that you don't associate with the primary one. They all follow that short, 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 long. And I think this movie could have done that in the score and had long, short, long, short. You could have adapted that to, like, in the flutes, for example, when Sprout is playing in the woods, and have it be really innocent and childlike and woodland. And then switch that when the Gorgon's on screen. You bring in the electronic instruments, make it disgusting and gross and, not natural because of synthesizers. But you could have still meant that, like, almost that dubstep, like, whoa, and like that, build that intensity that way. The fact that they had something so, again, losing points, because you have something very easy. You have something that's integral to the characters and to the on-set audio. That composer should have captured that, because you can take that motive and spin it throughout the entire rest of the score and have that line up with everything that you see, but keep it cohesive, right? Like, that's the thing. You can keep a motive cohesive but different for what you're, the story that and the action that you're trying to tell. Yeah, it kind of killed me that it was just generic.
I mean, you definitely have a much better ear than I do. And the composer Diego Rojas, known for Silhouettes, Check, and Poor Else. And so I'm curious to kind of listen to these pieces. I do agree with you. It hit me to the point where I'm like, oh, I've heard this song before. And I never thought I would hear a song that I've heard somewhere else in the score in this movie. And I think you said, like, it's an indie sort of, like, almost kind of stereotypical. I'm like, yeah. And now I spent, once I heard that song, I spent everywhere else trying to figure out where have I heard that song that was doing it a little bit better. Like them putting in that song in this particular movie kind of took me out of that particular kind of moment. I think it was just kind of an overarching, or it was an overspanning scene of the actual wilderness in the woods. And so at that point, I was like, oh, shoot. Like that, I felt like I heard this somewhere else, which is kind of a bummer. But I mean, your ears are definitely much better than mine. I didn't really notice all the technical stuff, as you're obviously.
Oh, no. Oh, the audio was all over the place. It was bad. Honestly, I'm sorry, guys. Like I know you could reach out to us. There's plenty of things you guys did really well. Whoever ran the Pro Tools session for that. Oh my God. Get a real engineer, not the assistant engineer from some studio down the street.
I was hiring you, bro.
No. Oh no. I would trust myself for that. Are you kidding me? They got like 150 tracks they got to mix in. That's too much. My brain can barely handle four. I could record the Beatles, and that's about it. That's a lie. That's some great stuff.
You can do that, you liar.
Yeah.
So let's move into our lasting thoughts. So, Mr. Blue, lasting thoughts here for Come Said the Night or the other film, title of the film that we talked about, Between the Darkness. Would you recommend this film? If so, what's another movie that you may want to tell people to check out before watching this film?
Yeah, so I in good faith, indie films are hard to put down, right? Like, you either have to be really into them or it's not going to work. And this is to the button one of those films. You will either really get it and really like it, or you won't get it or just not really care enough and just hate it. You know, like that's the film we're dealing with. For me, it was worth the watch. It was an interesting experience. There was things that I liked. I probably won't go back and revisit this ever again, but that's personal, you know. If you want to get into the indie film that is a closed story horror type film, to me, and I know I've talked about this film on our channel before, Funny Games, 150,000% is like, that's to me the home invasion standard. That we have to live by. And it carries a similar plot beat to what we experience in this film. Go watch that one. Honestly, I've never seen the Austrian version, but the American version, which is a shot-for-shot remake by the same director, is one of my favorite films of all time.
Cool. Yeah, I'll echo some of the things that you said here. I depending on where you watch this actual film, I'm curious to see if watching this film in a theater improves the experience or not. I'm not sure. I like kind of watching these actual films that definitely seems as though, you know, it's not quite there, sort of like kind of in the draft. But at the same time, I appreciate what's at least being put out there. I'll tell you this right now. Although it is an indie film, I will definitely 100% watch this film before I've seen Hellboy, Serenity, or Replicas in theaters. That's probably going to come out to digital, DVD, whatever that you want to call it. I know a lot of people kind of give this film a lot of shit, but I enjoyed for what it was. I think they had a lot of stuff working for it. I do think there's things that can definitely be improved, but there's still a movie and a script here that definitely can be better than what we got. And so I definitely was, I'm excited. I hope they keep obviously kind of making more movies. I'm curious to catch their next particular kind of film, what they kind of created, because I'll be down for it. Especially to the fact that some of these movies think that they have to make a two and a half hour film to make it good. And they kept it pretty close. I think it was about 90 minutes, 96 minutes, you're saying? 96
minutes.
So I thought it was actually kind of a good sort of length of it. And I'm curious of how the ending the movie ended, because it kind of left it a bit open, or I'm not sure exactly where it's going. So I thought that was actually a good way to kind of end this film. Another film that's sort of like it, I do try to kind of catch and watch more sort of indie stuff as much as I can. So I'm not sure if I've seen any indie films that's kind of like this. I know you mentioned Home Invasion, and Us is definitely going to be coming up there for that Home Invasion. But I do would say, I mean, I guess it will be something close to, and Hereditary is not really an indie film, would you say? I don't think so. I wouldn't call it an indie film.
No, but it's, I mean, A24? Is it A24? That's the production company.
For Hereditary?
Yeah, they pride themselves on being like, indie, but they have a million movies that are wide release. Yeah. Like they're not an indie film at this point anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get back to them just to check out and see. I'm like also looking at some of the actors' work with Lou Temple and Daniel Harris, and it does seem like they have a bit of a horror shtick kind of working for them. So I definitely would just suggest and kind of take a peek at their IMDb, because it looks like Lou Temple especially has been in a lot of different movies and different characters. So I'm curious to kind of see more of their work. And with that, we have been the Down in Front podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thanks so much for joining our last call segment. Buddy Blue, where can people find more of your work on the internet, and who are you drafting first for your fantasy football league?
Oh my God. Obviously Tom Brady.
Well, he's retired.
Oh, he is. Never retired.
Can you imagine if Tom Brady retires tomorrow?
Oh my God. Yeah, the Bills fan. Who do you think? I think literally snapping the ball to no one is probably a better quarterback than whoever you're trotting out there every week.
Our quarterback got more fantasy points than Tom Brady last year. Just saying.
Who?
Josh Allen, baby.
That's,
yeah, he did. So
that's trash.
And he didn't even play all the games, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys do have Eric Moulds to catch passes.
It was dope.
He was great. Dope. He was dope.
I'm like, you gotta watch your fucking mouth talking about Eric Moulds.
I hated Eric Moulds. He was like the Terry Glenn of the Bills. It was just like, all right, he's just gonna get catches. Anywho, Tom Brady, I love you. It's more than life itself. If you ever need to drain my life force to keep on playing football, I will gladly offer myself to hypocrites in your honor. So here's the thing. Check us out at Minus Music or Minus Band. We're finally practicing again. We finally have a show as a tune-up, I think from a couple weeks from now. And you could check us out at jesserandisquiet.com. It's just Jesse Rand going to places and shushing people. His most famous one, of course, is Fenway Park in Boston, Massachusetts, where he just walks around Lansdowne Street and tells people to be quiet. I think it's kind of rude.
Does he tell people to be quiet or just
shh? Yeah, just shh, 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 shh. It's pretty rude, but, you know, Jesse's going to Jesse, so. Also, check us out on OKCupid under the name Jesse Rand, because he is going to have an OKCupid eventually, and I hope that all of the Down in Front folks follow it. Do you follow dating? I don't even know.
I've never went to the OKCupid life. I thought that was a little bit outside my kink level.
What?
I don't know. Kink level? I mean, there's some crazy shit that happens at OKCupid.
Really?
Yeah, man. It's pretty out there.
I had one, and I logged onto it every once in a while, and I was just like, I don't get it.
Tinder and Bumble and Hinge are like the sort of like the safe ones. And then after you kind of branch off of that, you start getting really kind of weird. Even with the kind of the Grindr and the OKCupid, you start getting some weird shit. Yeah, man.
So this kid's dead straight. He's just like, I logged onto Grindr once, and that's some kinky stuff right there.
I was trying to find
men wanted to be with men.
I'm not sure why I become Southern there, but it's not only about men and men. Yo, men and men on Grindr, bro.
Really? I thought it was just dudes and dudes.
No.
Apparently, I need to download Grindr.
Yes. Yes, boy. If anything, did you take away from this particular review?
We have an hour and a half review. No. It's not even me. It's listeners down in front, Ryan Dowds. Please download Grindr, and then we'll all talk on Grindr together.
Let's talk about it. Check out more of our work at downinfrontpodcast.com, where you're going to see a bunch of our blogs. We're going to have a lot of different our movie reviews. We have our video teasers. We have our bios. It's going to be on there. We're on Twitter. We're at Facebook. So check this out there, @_DAFP on Twitter. Facebook is facebook.com/downinfrontpodcast. We have a Reddit. We have a YouTube. We even have a SoundCloud, which is dope because all the cool in music that you hear from our introductions of our show is all made by Buddy Blewett. So definitely go check out that work. Super excited. Stay tuned for our next review. We're doing Ready or Not, which I'm super excited to kind of talk about this movie here. So very curious about to get your thoughts later on, Blewett, if you're on that recording, because I think it's low-key a good movie, but I'm not sure. It could also be a terrible movie. I was sitting in the theater just confused, like, I don't know if this is a genius or a terrible, but the premise of this movie is absolutely phenomenal, and I'm really glad they kind of doubled down on the ridiculousness of it. So I'm pretty pumped to talk about that movie.
Word. Well, I'll see you on that day.
You got it. Thanks, everybody, and good night.
Bye-bye.